Hey, what's up? It's Frick. I'm just at my apartment here in Boston. I have to clean up in here. There is crap all over this piano. It's just been here. I don't know how long this crap has been here. I can see, like, one pile over there on the far end that's definitely been there since 9 months ago. Then there was a pile that my girlfriend started over here. My girlfriend Camilla. Then that's permission for me to pile other crap on. There's like a newspaper over here, a crossword puzzle. I don't know why we put stuff on the piano. It's not a good place for things. I need to find a better place for stuff. Although this piano has had a long history of having stuff piled on it because it used to be my grandmother's piano. And she always had some stuff on it. Mostly it was music, actually. She would, like, go through her music at the piano. That's a pretty smart thing to do, actually, near a piano. To go through music. Okay, the closest thing to me is this little pile of discs. There is a DVD screener of some silent films, which I scored last month. The Museum of Modern Art in New York. And, like, what do I do with that? I could put it away with other DVDs, but that means it's gone for forever, basically. I guess that's what I'll do with it. Here's my backup hard drive for my computer. It's good to have that handy. I give myself permission to keep that handy. Okay, paperwork to be filed. To be filed. Things about my grandmother's estate. Here's the thing, is that my grandmother passed away earlier this year. That took a while. Well, it took her 95 years or something. That sounds terrible. I will probably edit that out. I didn't mean it that way. But I mean, she lived a long time, and it was just like, it surprised everyone how long she lived, myself included. And it was not an easy life, and she didn't make anyone else's life easier, to be honest with you. I don't know if she ever made anyone's life easier. I don't know if that was something that she ever did. I don't think she was the kind of person who said, "Who can I help today? How many people can I help today?" Thing is, actually, she made everybody's life miserable. Mostly, that's what people remember about her. She made life really hard. That's the fact. That's the cold, hard facts. I'll post, like, a flashback episode of some stuff that she was talking to me about with her old accordion. She passed away in, I guess it would be February. I know we were planning, Camilla and I were planning on going away for Valentine's Day. To go to San Francisco to have a romantic weekend, and then there's never a good time for somebody to die. And actually, you know what happened was that the funeral was scheduled for like the week before our vacation, and then a big snowstorm came, and everyone had the same reaction. They thought, oh, this is grandma doing this. Like, even in her death, even after she's gone, she's still creating these big snowstorms and inconveniences and dramas. Dramatic scenes, you know, was her thing. She had collected a mint silver dollar for every year of my life and put them in a box. They were mint. They were like sealed in a special container and then sealed in another container and untouched by human hands and valuable collectible for the future, kind of a thing, you know. And I guess the idea was that it showed, like, well, first of all, you'd have them for a long time, and you'd have many of them because you'd have one for each year of your life, and it showed that she thought of you every year and she spent money on you and saved things for you. You know, she provided for you. She sacrificed for you, you know, and that was the way she was. And she often wanted credit for this kind of sacrifice. However, I didn't know about the silver dollars until I was an adult. And then she started wanting credit for these things. And I think she started with my dad, who knew about all of them and maybe was storing them for us. He had everybody's silver dollars, all my siblings, you know, and maybe some of my cousins too. I don't know. And it was silver dollars for everybody. And one for every year. So there was, I guess, hundreds of these silver dollars that were collected and organized. And now she wanted, you know, everybody to check and make sure they were all still there and all still intact and undamaged. And she wanted these things accounted for. She was calling my dad, you know, and he gave me my box of them so that she would leave him alone. She wanted me to make a trip to New York to present them to her to show that they were cared for. No one had stolen them or taken them for their own good or their own greed, and that they were all protected and stored properly. And at this time, she started accusing me that, so she was saying I wasn't taking care of them because I lived in a shack. It was a weird idea that she came up with, and one of the first things I had heard that made me think, oh, maybe she's like a little bit delusional or a little senile or whatever about something. Like maybe this whole thing isn't her concern. Maybe she's really getting old and losing her mind. But you don't want to think about those things, and what can you say? You know, what can you do about it, really? Can you call up a person and say, I think you're going senile, or I think you've got Alzheimer's, and, you know, I mean, there's nothing. You know, plus, it was for my dad to deal with, you know? I was just the grandson. However, even though I was just the grandson, I was one of the only people around who really was friendly with her, to be honest with you. She had so many smoldering bridges in her lifetime. It was pretty unbelievable. And she was kind of a force to be reckoned with. She was like a threat. So people didn't always talk to each other about how much trouble she was causing in their own lives. For fear that, you know, you'd be sort of singled out or isolated, or that, you know, she, you know, people wouldn't stand by you, maybe out of fear for her or whatever, or she'd turn people against you. Before I learned about my silver dollars and learned about, you know, how dramatic her life was and how many smoldering bridges there were, before all of that, I was, you know, just a kid like any other kid. And we were growing up in Connecticut. My cousins, you know, these are the children of my dad's sister, my Aunt Linda, her kids. They were all our age, me and my siblings. And so we grew up with them. We visited them every holiday, and between the holidays, we'd go to New York and spend time with them. And there'd be birthdays spent together and holidays. And they were our friends, you know, and they were our cousins, and we grew up with them. But there was a split at some point in the family, and we just stopped seeing them. We didn't think about it much. As kids, you're not in charge of those decisions anyways, and things happen when they happen. You go to visit your cousins when your parents say, we're going to visit your cousins, you know. We didn't ask about it. I don't think we thought about it. And also, you know, I hit the age where I was having friends and starting to have a life and, you know, whatever. You separate from your family and your parents in some way, even when you're young. I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted by stuff that's on the piano. I'm still cleaning stuff off the piano. This is some notes from the silent film show I did. I'm gonna recycle that too. Well, what had happened was that my grandfather, who I never knew about, I didn't even know he existed. And he was now my grandmother's ex-husband. But I didn't know about him. I didn't know I had a grandfather on that side of the family. I know that sounds really weird, but I just didn't know. It never occurred to me that I had more than one grandfather. And I didn't know about him until he died. And my brother told me that he died, and I was like, surprised to learn that he ever existed in the first place. But he had gone to live with my Aunt Linda, my dad's sister, when he got old. And that started a separation in the family because my grandma did not approve, and she disowned anyone siding with or caring for my grandfather. And that began a big dramatic split. So there was always lots of this drama. And, you know, as it stood, I was one of the only people who really somehow survived this period where she was just burning bridges. It was like she was at odds with the whole world. Sometimes she'd reach out to me, you know, and try to lure me into the fight or choose a side in all this. But I didn't really understand it, to be drawn into it. And Somehow I didn't. I just had... I understood that I shouldn't be drawn into it. I knew that it wasn't going to do me any good. To either agree with her or disagree with her on some of these things. And I played dumb a little bit. I just played... You know, I just... I stayed out of it with her. And it saved me. It saved me with her. And she'd come back and try to start the fight again, but... But it never got going. It never got traction with me. And so there was at least something for her to come back for again and again and again. And, you know, and I would derail the conversation and we'd start joking and we'd talk about music. And I think she'd enjoy herself and I'd enjoy myself. And our relationship survived where so many others didn't. And it was okay with me that she wasn't getting along with everyone else so much. I mean, what could I say about it or do about it? I didn't understand it. The only beef I had with her was that she was starting to get pretty crazy about these silver dollars, one for every year of my life. 30 some odd silver dollars, maybe 40 of them. I don't know. There may have been years where there was more than one. I don't have them to count right now, so I can't tell you. Her personality changed a lot, and her physical limitations began to show. There was a winter where she had slipped on the ice and then, you know, maybe like fractured her hip or something, and she didn't tell anyone. She was just like laid up for a while on her own, and nobody was there caring for her. Neither of her children really could get through to her or whatever, and she was shutting people out. She was at odds with the world. Then at one point she was hit by a car. No one knew about it until maybe months or a year after it happened. She was hit by a car and had to go to the hospital and was badly injured. And there was a lawsuit following this, you know, and it was a hit and run. And the person actually came back eventually. An SUV, someone hit her near her home. But all of this was probably caused by the fact that her vision had really deteriorated. She could hardly see. She was... nearly blind, but still walking from her apartment to like the nearby grocery store and crossing busy streets on her own and riding the bus and going to the bank and surviving, you know, but really totally on her own. She had very few people who were in touch with her on a daily basis. And she had people who she was friendly with, but I don't know if there were friends looking out for her. She had survived everyone and everything. By the way, I saw a lot of death with her. Her brother died. I went to that funeral. I was one of maybe four people attending. Her father? I went to the funeral of when her father died. It's weird. She always, at funerals, she'd always insist that the casket be opened, even if it wasn't supposed to be an open casket. It was a strange, morbid kind of a reaction she had around death. It was extremely emotional for her, and she always created a scene. She was famous for that. Infamous. My father and his sister decided they should move her closer to one of them. And my Aunt Linda did live, you know, like a couple hours away. So they moved Grandma to an apartment of her own, but still like within minutes of where Aunt Linda lived. I helped her move in there. My dad helped her move the first day, and he stayed over. He moved her stuff all day. And then he was so tired at the end of the day, he just went to sleep on the living room floor of the new apartment. And he woke up in the middle of the night and Grandma was hovering over him, snarling like a dog. Like maybe she didn't know who he was or she didn't know where she was. She was getting very paranoid at this point about money. You know, definitely the issue about the silver dollars was very high in her mind at this time as something that she could attach to and remember and became symbolic of like of her idea that people were going to take advantage of her or take her money. Hang on, I'm going to shut up for a second because there's some car alarm going off outside. Can you hear that? Okay, I guess that stopped. I don't know what that was all about. Should I look outside? Let's see what's out there. Oh, well. Okay, well, but it didn't work that they had put her in this apartment near Aunt Linda because she would wander off. She'd wake up and say, like, oh, where am I? This isn't my house. And then she'd just go out the door and go looking for her apartment, the apartment she remembered that she lived in for decades. That became clear that she couldn't really be safe there, you know. So over a period of a couple of years, my dad shifted her to a home for old people near where he lived. And that was truly the beginning of the end. Like, she stopped remembering who she was talking to, and they had to put her on a lot of drugs to chill her out because she was very anxious and uncooperative and ornery and very paranoid. She was very paranoid that things were being stolen from her. When they put her on the meds, she stopped fighting with me about the silver dollars. And then they just became this, just something for me to be bothered by. They were like, it was no longer between us, but it was between us. It was the only thing that she and I ever really fought over. And I had this box, and I kept moving it from apartment to apartment with me and sticking it on a shelf far away where I'd not notice it until the next time I moved. And you can't throw a thing like that away, and you can't even really sell them. I was hesitant to even look to see if they had any value, which I'm sure they had a higher value than dollars, which they were, since they were mint and they were collectible. But I didn't really feel like looking up the value and then having a dilemma of, oh, should I sell them for cash money, for profit, you know. I just put off dealing with it. And in February of this year, I had a dream that I've had about her more than once. I had a dream that she and I were traveling via a train. And suddenly she stood up and she had to get off the train before me, before my stop. And she had insisted that she'd be fine on her own and she had to get off. And in the dream, I had this dilemma that I couldn't get off with her. It was imperative that I stay on this train, and that I had a dilemma that I was afraid she couldn't see and she couldn't care for herself. And she convinced me that she'd be okay and that she should get off. And it was the second time I've had this exact dream on this exact train on the same set of tracks going through the same scenery, and so it was familiar to me. And I told Camilla about it. Immediately that morning, I said I had that dream about my grandmother again. 2 days later, my dad called me and said that she was holding on for her life, but that she was not going to be holding on for very much longer. And it was less than 24 hours later, she was gone. Everyone started to make these plans. And my sister described it as like a building coming down, like a skyscraper, like it was a monumental that she had died, because she was such a force in the family. Good or bad, she was a force on everyone. And to feel that kind of strength and that force removed from all that you know does truly leave a void, even if you didn't particularly enjoy it. You know, it's there was a void. And I spent some time going around the house and gathering some of the good things, which I have here in the other room. I'll take you in there if you want to take a look. Over here in the bedroom, I still have them on this dresser. It's like a shrine over here. There's a picture of me at about 3 years old, black and white picture, holding one of those sock monkeys. And the sock monkey, I named him Bunky, and she had made me that sock monkey when I was a little kid. And that little sock monkey was my dearest possession. Man, I'm a funny-looking kid. I got a misshapen head, and I'm wearing, like, a bow tie. And I got gaps between my teeth. I got these, like, apple cheeks. I was a little funny little kid. And there's a pile of letters here from her from over many, many years. Just to open one of them and look. This one's from 2003. It's in her handwriting on, like, airmail paper. She wrote letters to everyone. And, she had correspondences with people in Europe and old friends and old family and the grandchildren and whomever. And all of her letters she wrote by hand and then copied by hand to make a second copy for reference, so that when she received a response to the letter, she could read her own, her own copy of her own letter and see the responses, next to the original letter. So I have those, and at the time of her death, I gathered those and many other things. The thing that was troubling to me most of my memories and what I had gathered and what was unsettled was the box of silver dollars. And I called the funeral home to ask if I could have a private visitation the day before the funeral. And Camilla helped me prepare a sort of a send-off package that I would send off with my grandma into the afterlife. And I gathered those silver dollars, and we made like a cloth, kind of a carrying pouch for them, and put them in there. And I drove to the funeral home and delivered them. And they were placed in her casket with her and buried with her this year. And this is her piano. This is pretty much it, you know, for me, you know, of her, this is the thing that has stayed, you know. It's really, I let it get out of tune. It's like I don't want anyone else touching it or tuning it, so I tune it myself, and I don't do it often, and I don't do it well. You've been listening to the Frickin' Circus podcast. It's on the web at frickincircus.com. And you can email me, and I'd sure like it if you did, at frick@frickincircus.com. Peace out, sauerkraut.